The Tom Woods Show, episode 1034.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you're living in terror of your SJW boss and colleagues, it's probably time to start a side hustle online. And as somebody who's self-published books, created a successful podcast, been a successful affiliate marketer, and many other things, I can tell you step by step what to do. And as a matter of fact, I've done that in my free ebook, Five Paths to an Online Income. Check it out at pathstoincome.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here talking to Owen Benjamin, who has had a successful career as an actor and a stand-up comedian, ran afoul of the Thought Police on the most ridiculous issue imaginable. We're going to talk about that, and yet he is still prospering. He just released a crowd-funded comedy special that we'll talk about, and he's an example of how you can, in fact, carry on despite attacks by the crazy people. He also hosts the podcast Why Didn't They Laugh, which is a very interesting podcast indeed, and no doubt we will talk about that as well. Owen, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
I can't get over what happened to you. We're going to get to that in a minute, but I knew you were a good guy when Dave Smith and Michael Malice vouched for you. You know, Michael Malice vouches for you, you know, I'm 70% of the way there. But then when Dave Smith jumps in, I go, okay, all right, we got a good guy on our hands. Let's talk about what happened to you at the University of Connecticut, because apparently, according to the news reports, you said something profoundly controversial.
Yes, it was very controversial. I said that three-year-olds shouldn't be allowed to choose gender and then be put on hormone blockers. And I got in a bit of an argument on Twitter with this guy who's I really don't know that much about him, but I guess he's got some sort of power in Hollywood. And he has a son who's now a girl, and he's six. And they were coming at free speech, him and this guy, John Hodgman, who I thought I was kind of buddies with, but I guess he's kind of getting a little crazy. They were mocking Mel Brooks's comment about how PC is hurting comedy. And I was like, well, you have a transgender child, like you're dressing your kid up as the wrong gender. And then we started going back and forth, and I'm like, just answer me yes or no. Are you planning on giving them hormone blockers? Cause there's no going back from that. And they're like, well, when the medical professionals, you know, if they think that's the thing to do. And I'm like, you guys are sick people, man. And then everyone started coming at me hard, like tons of blue check mark people. It wasn't just the normal trolls. And I wouldn't back down. And like something that I was talking to Rogan about and that my wife kind of coined, she was like, yeah, this is a hill you can die on. And I'm like, yeah, like I back down from things that I know aren't like I backed down from these type of outrages before when I didn't think the stakes were that high where it didn't matter. But this one, I'm like, no, man, if I have to get a job at a gas station, I won't agree that this isn't horrific to do to children. And so I lost, I had a gig that week at University of Connecticut, and they canceled it. And then within 3 weeks, I had no agent, no manager. They just full-blown blackball. And they also were telling me that I should pull back on my opinions on Twitter and all this stuff. And I'm like, dude, I am a comedian. Like I can't have a hard party line except for, you know, individualism, you know, kind of like we're pirates. And I did that tweet that got like 30,000 retweets about, it was a picture of all the late night comedy hosts. And it just said, they all have the same party. They all endorse the same candidate. They all have the same view on everything. Ladies and gentlemen, quote unquote comedy. And they still don't care. They're like, no, you're problematic. And I'm like, so it was devastating. And but then I got such a huge amount of support from comedy fans and just good people and just the Dave Smiths and the Michael Malices and the Joe Rogans and the Steven Crowders of the world that were like, they're not bent on a party line. They're bent on just being good at their job. And they supported me. And now I have a new career trajectory. And it's interesting, and it's a lot of whirlwinds happening, but it, you know, it's all good.
That's an amazing story on a lot of levels. Now the happy ending part of it, that you not only still have a career, but have a successful career and things are going well for you, and we'll talk about your special in a few minutes, is a testament to the internet, basically, making it possible for somebody like you who's been blackballed by everybody, nevertheless, to continue. And this is the sort of thing that Michael Malice, when I'm getting discouraged, will remind me of. He'll say that, you know, let's say 20 years ago, an Owen Benjamin would never have been heard from again. That'd be it.
Right,
that
would exactly. Be it. I
mean, you know, you'd struggle to try to get into some club here and there, but that would be it. But now we have this platform whereby suppressed voices still can be heard, still can attract an audience, and still can make a decent living. That is an advance. But here's the problem. At the same time that that's happening, I think the totalitarian impulses of these people are really coming to the surface. It drives them crazy that you have these opportunities. And I just read the other day, I hope this is wrong, that 40% of millennials think the government ought to punish hate speech. And of course, hate speech, I'm sure that'll be very precisely defined, right? So in other words, you could have been imprisoned. And some of these little snots would have been perfectly content with that, with you going to prison over what you said.
Oh, yeah, but they'll lose. They can't win. It's like the cultural spirit of America and of Western culture won't allow that. And for a while, I thought that that could really happen here. And I've read some of the same stuff, and I've seen these, you know, I've seen people say things like hate speech, the most subjective possible thing, you know, hate speech. Like, one person's hate is another person's freedom, you know. It's like, what does that even mean? And like, I'm a freedom of speech absolutist, where you have to be able to make mistakes in order to figure out what you even believe. And people treat me like this ignorant idiot. And it's like, my dad has his PhD in rhetoric. Like, I was raised by a guy who taught speech. And so, like, that's one reason why I know how important this is, that you can't start these cyber gulags. You know, you can't put people away like that. We have to have a marketplace of ideas and a marketplace of comedy, or else we're done. And they keep trying to do this stuff, but the spirit and will of people to seek out ways of finding what they like and what they believe in is so much more powerful than these authoritarians. Because the authoritarians, in the end of the day, are incredibly weak people who rely on identity politics to have any sense of strength in the world, because they're cowards. So when you stand up to them, they back down like Gollum. You know, it's just like, ugh. And that's why I highly encourage people just to call them out for what they are, and you will just see how quickly they back down. And yes, they do hate us, because we don't hate ourselves, and we have personal autonomy, and we have loving families and all that stuff. It's crazy.
You, of course, know about the example, one of my favorites ever, of Jordan Peterson, the professor in Canada.
Oh, I love him. He's literally one of my heroes.
All right. So you're like the Jordan Peterson of comedy. You're the guy saying, look, I'm not going to change my mind on this, and you can bring all the pressure in the world you want to bring against me, but I'm not changing my mind. And the result has been, he is better known than ever. He's better funded than ever. He's more successful than ever, and he's more secure than ever. And if they did try to put him in prison, which is conceivable under the so-called Human Rights Commission, if you can believe they call it that. I mean, do they have to follow Orwell down to the last detail? You know?
Exactly.
You know, but I mean, if they were to do that, the thing is that, you know, it might satisfy the most extreme among them, but all decent people everywhere, you know, of whom there are still a good number, as you say,
yeah,
would just pound away at that, which is why I do think there's a part of them that does not want to put him in prison. They want him to be terrified into saying what they want him to say, but they don't want to put him in prison because he'll be a martyr. They just want to terrify him. And that's what, you know, I just had Kevin Gutzman, a historian, on the other day, and he said, I'm convinced that what these people enjoy doing with their power is forcing people to say things that those people know to be untrue.
Absolutely.
And they just delight in this.
Yeah, because that's how you control someone. That's how you get compliance. Because, I mean, who knows what truth truly is? I believe there is truth. I'm not a postmodernist. I believe there's good and evil. But it's tough for me to fathom all of it. But Peterson talks about saying things you know aren't true. That is a problem. So it's like they want, it's like right out of Star Trek or 1984, when it's like, there are four lights. It's like, say there are three lights. It's like, there are four lights. It's like, once you say there are three lights, they own you. because that means you're now disjointed from your instincts, from your reason, from your personality. Like once you admit, once you say something you know is false, it's game over, and they know that, and they squeal with delight like demons. It's literally like it's almost biblical. Like watching the Evergreen State students get just these well-respected PhD college professors with all this clout to like back down from like a microaggression, which was eye contact. And then when they do it, when they apologize, they just start laughing. And I'm like, you guys are self-hating, just crazy people. And I will never back down. And you're right. They know not to make a martyr, and they want people to police themselves. They want us to police ourselves. And I recently read The Gulag Archipelago by Solzhenitsyn. And I was talking to Malice about this actually. And that's one thing that you see is just this huge amount of people being controlled by a small amount of people based on shame techniques and just basic compliance techniques. And I won't let that happen.
Well, this is why, and I keep repeating this so that everybody gets it. This is why there are certain provocateurs out there, and I'll take Milo as the classic example, whom I generally have supported, even though I don't like every single word that comes out of his mouth. I mean, I don't like every single word that comes out of anybody's mouth, unless they're me.
Right.
So it's true that there are things I object to about him. But what I like about him is precisely what his opponents dislike about him, which is what he represents and symbolizes. He symbolizes the guy, the Owen Benjamin, the Jordan Peterson, who says, there are an awful lot of us who are tired of being lectured to by savages and ignoramuses. I mean, because the people lecturing us, I really think are exceptionally low IQ. Not all of them, but a good bunch of them.
Well, especially, they have to be. They have to be.
Yeah.
It's like what Peterson said, where it's like, you either have to accept you're a coward and a liar or start believing the nonsense. And I think that having knowledge of Stalin versus Hitler, having knowledge of the American Revolution or the Constitution would disprove all of their thoughts. So they have to stay dumb or else they admit they're cowards. So they're in the business of being stupid.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, their whole existence depends on it. So that makes it fun for me, because my whole shtick is I correct stupid people who try to pass around PC history, whatever. I have a whole shtick based on that. I have a whole career based on that. I have 12 books based on this. I got a podcast and everything. So, you know, the dumber they are, the better it is for me professionally. So I'll say that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I gave Dave Smith a compliment before. And this is the compliment I give to a lot of people that have more of a thought process of you or me or Dave or Peterson or a lot of these people, where I'm like, if I make a good point to you that may disprove your point, you look excited, not scared. And I'm like, I think that's a major divider between people, where it's like, some people will look threatened and angry when you show them that they may have been wrong about something. And other people are like, thank you for giving me more, a sharper sword or more food for my journey. You know what I mean? It's like some people are excited about a new angle or thought, and other people find it terrifying. And I like the people that prefer to get better at life and not worse.
You know, I want to get to your special after this one final question on this. I want to get your opinion on something that came up in yesterday's episode. When I was trying to cheer up the guest and myself, I was getting really bummed about the state of civilization. And what I tried to say was, but look at Peterson. He stands up to the mob and he prospers. And my guest said, fair enough, but look at the issue he has to stand up on. I mean, this is something that would not have occurred to anybody,
yeah,
even a few years ago, that there would have to be a whole new set of pronouns. And nobody was thinking about this. This was not even a thing.
No.
And so now my thinking on this is that what he's doing goes way beyond the pronouns. But of course, that is the precipitating issue. And so his point is, yeah, okay, we do have platforms for people to resist, but it's getting to the point where we have to resist on stupider and stupider and crazier things.
Yeah, I was telling somebody, or I was tweeting or something about, I was like, 20 years ago, Ben Shapiro would just be a normal, nerdy conservative. I'm like, and I love Ben Shapiro. He's one of my like favorite podcasts. It's like, they've turned people like him into rock stars by being so crazy. Like, I went from being a comedian that would almost be considered hacky, like men and women are different, you know, to being seen as like a free speech activist, but
yeah,
with the same jokes, you know, because I would do jokes about, you know, soap opera music eyes in a girl's head versus the song in a guy's head. I did that for a Comedy Central special, and it was a big joke and people liked it. And then all of a sudden it's now being said that men and women are identical, yet you can be a woman and a man and all this nonsense. Like just logical fallacies where you can't be the same and be trapped in it. Obviously you get it, but like, so now that joke could be seen as like problematic, where it's like, just because I say men and women are different. And so now I have to stand on that hill, and now I have to stand on this other hill where it's like, no, you can't. Cause once you start agreeing to this nonsense, they won't be able to back down. And that's how it's like an outrage Ponzi scheme where you eventually get to the 3-year-olds and dress them up in dresses and don't let them go through puberty. And that's what gets me vicious. Like I hate people that would do that to a child.
Had you ever gotten anywhere near this point before where you either had something canceled or you were at your career was somehow at risk because of something you had said?
Yeah.
Or was this brand new for you?
Yeah, but I backed down. It was when Beyonce did that Black Panther salute. I did a tweet where I was like, imagine if someone did a KKK dance. And my point, I still believe to be valid, is that identity politics is identity politics. And granted, the comparison between KKK and Black Panthers isn't, it's hyperbolic. It's not an exact comparison at all. But the comparison I was making was Black pride, white pride. And basically, if you're going to do a racial pride dance in a secular American pastime event, you're going to open yourself up to white pride. And I was called a racist. I was just ripped apart. And I did an apology. It was fairly passive aggressive. It was, I was like, on Twitter, never attack Beyonce. And if you're white, stay very quiet. You know, I was being sarcastic, but they're like, okay. But after that, I could tell, you know, because I've been in the Hollywood crew for a long time. You know, I've been in movies and I've had Comedy Central specials. I've had development deals and all this stuff. And I've done Fallon and I've been in Chelsea lately and all this stuff. And like that moment, it wasn't like now. Like now I'm just a pariah, but that moment, people would just look at me a little different. Like, are you not on board? And I'm like, I actually don't see race. I mean, I do, obviously, but I judge people on their skill set, their ideologies, their culture, whether or not they're a good person. I don't think race matters as far as judging a human being. And I started seeing that the left cares primarily around race and gender and sexuality and all this stuff. And I'm like, isn't that what you guys fought against? And they could, I could feel a tension, but it didn't reach the climax is when I, you know, defended children's ability to go through puberty, but I wouldn't back down at that. And I would only escalate and people would come at me and I would only, you know, my agents were like, you got to stop tweeting. And I would be like, all right, now I'm going to double it. And I'm like, I'm not going to stop. And that made them, you know, it made a lot of the world respect me and support me. And it made Hollywood despise me.
Well, that leads to the next thing I want to talk about. You recently released a special. How did you?
Yeah.
How did you do it without any major support?
Well, that's the beauty of the internet and the will of people. And I have a website, hugepianist.com, because I'm 6'7" and I play the piano and I have a sense of humor of an 8-year-old. So and people could donate to produce a special. And my goal was 10 grand and I hit it. And then I shot the special in Manchester, England, because I was on tour there, and then released it. And then and the feedback was so good, I released it on my website, and we're selling it. I've already reached another special, you know, except this time it was 15 grand, and I've already got to that. People, literally, I didn't even ask for this, but I list them all the donors as producers on it, because I'm like, you guys produce this. I used to have to list Sony and Comedy Central and all these people that don't care about comedy. I'm like, you guys produce this, you're part of this, and I'm going to make something that makes you laugh. I'm going to make fun of cultural appropriation. I'm going to make fun of John Lennon, Imagine. I'm going to, you know, I do a bit about John Lennon's Imagine being a little communist. And so I already have enough for another special, and I'm going to shoot that. And my Patreon is growing patreon.com/WDTL for my podcast is Why Didn't They Laugh? So it's just WDTL. And so I'm scheduling to shoot another special in January and they can't stop us. And it's like, as much, the more they try, the more people are like, okay, well, there's this massive underserved market of people that just want to laugh and not be lectured to, you know, like a Jimmy Kimmel. They just want to see him be funny and not cry about guns and healthcare, about stuff he doesn't even understand. And they don't want to see Meryl Streep tell us not to like MMA as she's covering up for a rapist for 30 years. Like, we're done with these people. And it's like the birds of paradise getting these big plumes. It's like people like me, like I do tree work when I'm not doing comedy. Like my brother's an arborist. I haul lumber when I'm not doing comedy to make ends meet when I'm getting my dates canceled. And it's like people like me and a lot of my friends work hard to support people like that so they can feel safe and make their art so they can represent us. And they don't represent us anymore. They're trying to play to each other. They're in their... In their little Oscar ceremonies, just trying to make each other think each other is brave, and no one else likes it. Even normal liberals in America, not the leftists, but just the normal, like the kind of liberals that just want like unions and, or, you know, just people that just consider themselves liberals are now moving towards the right because the Overton window is just falling off a cliff, where unless you believe in absolute nonsense, you're considered a Nazi. And so that's opening up this whole world for people like me and Dave Smith and Michael Malice and Crowder and Dave Rubin and Rogan. And I mean, not the Rogan, you know, some of these guys don't really need it, but like people are just done with it, you know, and they're just going to find it's the way markets will correct culture. It's like they'll find another place to go.
Well, what is the name of the special?
It's called Feed the Bear.
Okay.
And the next one is going to be called, I'm still working on the names. They're going to be called Problematic. I was going to call it, Was It Something I Said, but that's already a Billy Connolly special, a great Scottish comedian. I didn't realize that. But Feed the Bear, you can get it at hugepianist.com. You can download it right off Vimeo. And all proceeds go to the next special. So let's keep it going.
Yeah, well, you should be getting more support on Patreon. I love how your goal is $42,949,673 per month.
That's it.
I appreciate it. That's absolutely great. I happened to go see just a couple of nights ago here in Melbourne, Florida, John Cleese, and he was there with his daughter. Now, he's got fairly conventional views on a lot of things, but he claims at least to be against political correctness because he thinks it destroys comedy. So that came up in the event. One of the questions was, can you elaborate on that? And he did. And even though he probably is a fairly conventional left liberal, like most comedians, he really did speak pretty convincingly about this. And his daughter, who was touring with him, Camilla, made what I thought was a fairly right-wing point. She said, what I think's happening is, as real oppression is declining, they have to search ever harder to find anything they could even remotely call oppression, and then they have to try to crack down on jokes about that. It's just getting out of control because there frankly isn't that much oppression. Now, I don't think that was a left-wing point. That was actually, I was surprised to hear her say that. But when this subject came up, virtually the entire audience applauded at the prospect of, you know, that he might go on to say that PC was a bad thing that was not good for comedy and not good for society. So those people in that audience, that's your audience.
Oh, yeah. And they're everywhere. Like PC was coined by Mao. Like people that think it's a good thing are like right now, the progressives are progressing towards totalitarianism. And like a lot of conservatives in America are seen as these like stuffy, no change guys. But in reality, they're trying to conserve the original founding father concepts that was the ultimate in progressiveness, you know, the empowering of the individual. And I think that these people will end up imploding. Because as I said, it's an outrage Ponzi scheme. And like what you said, they ran out of actual problems. So now they're searching for problems because they don't have any moral compass. They're full of self-hatred. They don't feel they deserve anything that they have. So it turns into bitterness and resentment. And it's interesting because Peterson described this one concept very well, because I've always considered myself liberal, but not a liberal, because liberal just means open-minded, which most artists are. But I'm not a liberal. You know, I'm politically I'm right wing, but I'm liberal in the sense that I, you know, I'm open to new ideas when it comes to music or comedy or anything. And I think that's one of the million words that the left has hijacked is just the word liberal. Because like a liberal and the quality, the personality trait of liberal couldn't be more different. It's like, it's Orwellian opposite, doublespeak again. It's like to be liberal and to be a liberal are the opposite. And I think that's something that people should really come to terms with.
It seems to me that the more you can tell your story and the more interviews you can do and videos you can make, the better for you. Because as soon as people hear it, they think, I want to support this guy. And this is my way, in my limited capacity to stand up to these people, of standing up to these people. Because we need people like you out there alerting the rest of society to what happened so that they know how crazy it's getting.
I know, and if it goes too slowly, it's like that the frogs in the boiling water, because it's like I'm a canary in a coal mine, and I was saying this stuff 2 years ago, and my friends and family back home in the small town that we live in were like, no, you're crazy, you're paranoid, you're on the road too much, your world's crazy, and now these things are becoming law in Canada and being pushed here, and it's, you know, all of media has become just left of Stalin, and they're finally like, wow, you were right about that. And I'm like, and I'm right about what's coming next unless people start talking. And some people can't talk, so they just support people like me, where it's almost like I have a friend that will remain nameless that literally has been nominated for an Oscar and can't speak up in LA, and it kills him. And so one day I just look on my PayPal and it just said that I got $5,000 from somebody. And I call him. I'm like, dude, what is this? Like, is this a mistake? He was like, no, I'm donating to the special. I'm like, buddy, I can't take that much money from you. That's weird. He goes, dude, I need to give this to you. He's like, please make like actual comedy. I can't say this stuff publicly. So I like to relieve my conscience, please take it and just make the best stuff you can. And I don't think people realize how many people in LA in the industry that may give these awful speeches actually don't think it, but they can't. It's almost like when you ride a dragon, you can never get off because the dragon eats you. It's like that thing. It's like some people can't say what they believe, and so they desperately rely on people like me to like just at least say something honest because they're dying inside, you know.
It's unbelievable we're even having this conversation, but I think it's great that you're able to still continue on. But I'd like to see you get more Jordan Peterson cash. You know, you don't have to take it from him, but it's coming from some of the same people. I'd like to see you. I want to see you absolutely crush it out there, because the more you do that, the more of a it sends a signal to the bad guys and the good guys. It says to the bad guys, go ahead, screw you. You know, we're going to carry on with or without you. And it says to the good guys, you can do this. You can jump on the fence. You don't have to be a coward because you're worried about where your next meal is going to come from. You can do it too.
Exactly. Because a lot of this stuff comes from that, like basic primal fear of like, can I provide for my family? If I say this, I'll get kicked off my CW show or something. And it's like, if we provide a path that's doable, it will make more people jump off that sinking ship. And it'll just be Hollywood, just the Titanic, just clutching their pearls, just screaming, you know, if you get on that lifeboat, you can never come back. And we just give them the bird and bail.
What is a comedian's podcast like? I know Part of the Problem by Dave Smith, but it's very political. It's funny, but mostly political. You have a podcast called Why Didn't They Laugh? What's it about?
Well, for most of it, I was touring so much, and I have a pretty analytical mind, and I think that like comedy reveals so much about human nature, history, engineering. So I would take a joke that wouldn't work right off the bat, and I would show the listener how I got to a funny place where I would show one joke, and show it bomb, then show it bomb a little less, and then eventually show it kill, and then that became. I couldn't always do that. So I would just show jokes working or not working and why. And I would be doing, you know, before the election, I'd be doing shows in Atlanta, and I'd be doing different ways of talking about politics and trying to show people like it isn't an issue of good and evil. These are cultures you don't understand, and this is how you represent yourself to them, you know? And, or it'd be simple, silly jokes. And that was fun. But now it's a lot more, I wouldn't say political. It's more like cultural, where it's like, because I'm touring less and I was just trying to get my affairs in order after all this stuff. And so I've just been doing more, I don't know, just piano stuff. Like I broke down The Wall recently, like Pink Floyd's The Wall and all the history behind it. You know, I just like to make stuff for people. But the original concept of Why Didn't They Laugh was just that. And I would interview a lot of comedians when I lived in LA, but now that I live in the middle of the Adirondack Mountains, it's a lot more solo. But my YouTube is quadrupled in a month because of, I think people have found me through this and like and respect what I'm doing. So I've been doing a lot more live streams on there. Like I'll take song requests and then I'll break down some historical event and that's about it. And people seem to dig it.
That sounds like a brilliant idea. I'm fascinated by the inner workings of comedy because when you watch a stand-up comedian who's really good, it just seems to flow so naturally. It's just like it's a spontaneous stream of consciousness. But you know that it's actually been carefully honed and crafted and things have been discarded and things have been added and audience reactions have been incorporated. But you don't see any of that. And so I've talked to Dave Smith about this and sometimes he kind of pooh-poos the idea, you know, that there's all this technical stuff that goes into it. But then when he started talking to me, he was saying, well, now look, the reason this joke worked was I had to have the three examples and each one had to do. And I think maybe at the same time he was explaining it to me, he realized, wait, I guess I do know an awful lot about how to write a joke and how comedy works. And as a guy on the outside, I would love to know more about that. So I am definitely subscribing to your podcast. I'm sick of listening to history and politics and economics all the time. He says on a history and politics and economics podcast, but I would love for some, just to be refreshed with some of that. How often do you do it?
I used to do it twice a week. Now I do it. It's whenever I don't know, maybe once a week. But if you go in the past, like the first episode is called Caesar Salad. And the joke was about legacy. It's a basic silly joke about like, you know, one of my super rich friends can never hang out. And I'm like, why won't you hang out? He's like, 'cause I want a legacy. And I'm like, Julius Caesar took over the whole world. What did he get? A salad. Right. And so that joke took so much time. 'Cause I would try to give other examples like the Earl of Sandwich or like, Stroganoff and all these. And it was also about like how I said it. Was it casual? Was I scolding him? And it just shows like all the different elements. And then a ton of episodes are about hecklers. Oh, want to know what I recommend you watch on YouTube? I did a documentary called 60 Minutes, 7 Days. And it's me writing an hour of comedy in 7 days and all the trials and tribulations that went through it. And that I think is like Dave Smith and his girlfriend really liked that one. Like when we first started becoming friends, they told me that they watched it. So that one will really show you the underbelly of comedy and how there is an element of chaos to comedy where you can't think too much and you just have to do it and be funny. But there also absolutely is an order and an engineering to it that I think is fascinating. Because in LA, I would watch Bill Burr bomb, who's like one of my favorite comedians. And then I would watch the joke slowly become amazing. And I just wanted people to see that because I'm like, that's the most interesting part to me. Isn't the applause. It's how you take some kind of insane concept and make it a joke.
I am going to. OK, yeah, look, I got a whole bunch of Owen Benjamin stuff to dig into. I'm looking forward to it. What I'll actually do is on the show notes page. This is episode 1034. So tomwoods.com/1034. I will put a link to your website, a link to the special, and I'll put up that documentary that you just mentioned and I'll link to the podcast. So basically everything and your Twitter, because people are going to be entertained if they're following you on Twitter. Get all that stuff, all the Owen Benjamin stuff.
I love
it. In a convenient place. Now, of course, another convenient place to get the Owen Benjamin stuff is at your website. But this is the second place, if they forget your website, which is hugepianist.com.
Yeah.
All right. Then there's also tomwoods.com/1034, which is not as funny, but It's what they've come to expect. You know, I deliver things that listeners come to expect. Well, congratulations on not being crushed and into a million pieces, but getting up and carrying on and sticking it to them.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. I would like
to say I got my whole audience behind you. I can't be sure of that because maybe I have a few crazy people listening, but all the normal people in the audience are cheering you on. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. And the crazy people usually like me the most. So I'll take those guys.
Excellent. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
All right, everybody. Tomorrow it's back to economics. We got Bob Murphy coming back on, and we're going to talk about Mises and a major, major advance he made that probably most people don't realize. So we're going to have some fun talking some economics tomorrow. Right now, I want to tell you about a listener named Jorge Morales, who just created a website called DontSignTheLease.com, and it promotes both his book and his podcast. He has a book called Don't Sign the Lease, The Tale of a Triumphant Business Owner, and he says, "This highly entertaining and informative story will unveil and open up the commercial real estate industry for business owners. Most people may not fully appreciate someone who gets a lease right, but getting it wrong can cause irreparable harm to your company, your career, and your reputation. You'll learn how to avoid costly pitfalls in lease agreements." And as one testimonial says, Jorge Morales simplifies for the consumer of real estate, or the tenant, what you need to know to get a fair deal in a landlord-dominated market. He also has the Don't Sign the Lease podcast. And he says, in real estate transactions, there are winners and there are losers. Far too often, the tenant, the business owner, is the loser. So very interesting. You may be able to get some helpful insight over at DontSignTheLease.com. And remember that, of course, you too can get publicity for your website if you use my link to get your hosting before you get the site started. And I give you lots of other bonuses, as you know, and I get you the best price around that Bluehost has for hosting. So why the heck not? Get the details on how to get these goodies for yourself at tomwoods.com/publicity. I will post don'tsignthelease.com on our show notes page, tomwoods.com/1034, as the listener website mentioned. Get ready for some economics tomorrow, and I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.